There's a lot going on in the National Hockey League. We got a guy who could be a 60-goal scorer, another one who keeps scoring and climbing the goals chart, and we got another outdoor game coming up this weekend. Sean, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Dan, and you forgot. We're less than 2 weeks from the trade deadline. It is like a hockey smorgasbord right now.
12 days as we record this on Wednesday, March 9th, and we got a lot to get to. We have a good guest here, player playing really well this season, Tage Thompson from the Buffalo Sabres. Lot to talk to him about. They'll be in the Heritage Classic against the Toronto Maple Leafs on Sunday at Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton, Ontario. But first, Sean, and I mentioned this a little bit just before we started recording, I have to get something off my chest that seems to be, it's bothering me. It's not you. I've been hearing this of late, and it usually comes up at this time of the year, maybe a little bit later. It was like a playoff game. You hear that a lot now. It was not like a playoff game. I was hearing it last night as I'm watching and seeing things with the Nashville Predators and Dallas Stars. Nice game, good regular season game. Nashville wins 2-1. It was like a playoff game. No, it wasn't. It was not like a playoff game. Can we stop disrespecting playoff hockey and Stanley Cup playoff hockey and Stanley Cup playoff games? It was one of 82, an important regular season game, a 4-point swing game, no doubt in the standings for the Central Division, but it was not like a playoff game. It was intense. It was a strong regular season game. There's still a lot of hockey left to play, and we hear it more and more. It was like a playoff atmosphere. No, it wasn't. Go to a playoff game, and that's a playoff atmosphere. It was like a playoff game had that intensity. No, it didn't. It's not one of seven. It's one of 82. I've been hearing it. It's not the only game I heard it about. So I've got a forum. We've got a podcast. I can rant a little bit. I can get this off my chest. It's not a legendary rant like you have. I'm holding back a little bit because I don't want to say anything too out of line and too out of whack, but it bothers me when I hear these things. It's like a playoff game. It's a really good regular season game. Can we leave it at that?
No. There are games that are like playoff games. I thought the Nashville-Dallas one last night and the one that we saw when we were in there for Rene night. Like, there are games that generate that kind of intensity. Dallas and Nashville don't like each other. They play playoff-style hockey. The building was alive. Like, to me, those are the games when you have young players and you have players that don't have a lot of playoff experience. Those are the training wheel games. Those are the games that get them ready for playoff hockey. And they are like playoff hockey. They take that. Let me put it to you this way. Nobody was napping as easily last night in Nashville or Dallas. Play in Seattle. I do know that because it's a way bigger game. And you are allowed to have playoff like games during the regular season, because what's the point if you don't?
It's 26 games left to play for the Nashville Predators.
Sure.
And 26 games left to play for the Dallas Stars. This game that they played last night, Tuesday night, was an important game. But it's not the end-all be-all of whether they're going to make the playoffs or not. It's not going to be a deciding game of if their season ends tonight or not, right? It was not like a playoff game. It was intense. It was fun, low scoring. It had the makings of what a playoff game could look like, but it did not have everything a playoff game has. It didn't have that pressure to win that a playoff game has. It didn't have that extra gear that guys always give in the playoffs. You weren't going to see a guy diving in front of a puck with his teeth that night. I mean, maybe you would, but unlikely you will in the playoffs. Anyway. It was like a playoff game is an overrated term. They're not like playoff games. They're really good regular season games. That's what they are.
They're like playoff games, and that are the reason we tune in, and they're the reason when you look at the schedule, you say, I'm going to watch this game tonight because it's going to be like a playoff game. That's the atmosphere.
All right. We will disagree. You've ruined my rant. Fine. But I still feel that way. You're not going to take me off of that. I'm going to be on that one for a while. It was not like a playoff game. But anyway, let's get to a few other things. And we mentioned it off the top here. Alex Ovechkin, Sean, two more goals in a win against Calgary. By the way, Washington's won three in a row, so they're starting to come back, trending in a right direction again. And now Alex Ovechkin, 766 goals, tied for third all time with Jaromir Jagr. I mean, he's obviously going to pass him. By the time you listen to this podcast, he might pass him because they play tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. He just keeps putting the puck in the net, and it was an empty net goal that he got. And you, if you saw, he had a chance at another empty net goal right after that one too, and he missed wide, and that would have passed. That would have been the goal that passed Jágr, and he was so furious at himself too that he missed wide. And it's just, I think it's, you know, when he hits these marks and he passes these guys or ties these guys, it gives everyone a chance to sort of step back and look at the big picture of this. He just continues to amaze, man. I mean, the way he scores and the energy that he continues to play with, it's just outstanding.
And an interesting footnote to all of that is he scores in the Saddle Dome, the same place that Jágr scored his last goal playing for the Calgary Flames. So that was nice. But he's nowhere near done. Like you mentioned, I personally find it amazing. He's 36 years old. He's scoring at the same rate he scored his whole career almost. He's going to have his best season since 18-19 goals-wise, for sure. Shows no signs of slowing down. For years, we debated, you know, he could never make it because he'd have to score so many goals in his post 35 years, and nobody had done it before. And he's rewriting that record book. Like, nobody has done this before. All of those guys that we talked about slowed down. Jágr slowed down. Gretzky slowed down. Howe slowed down. They all took a step back. They lost the gear and they changed their games. And Alex Ovechkin hasn't changed his game yet. He's still scoring like a crazy person.
He's scoring at a better rate right now than guys that he's more than a decade older than. You know, I mean, he's got more goals than David Pastrnak, Alex DeBrincat, Kyle Connor. Those are the guys that trail him right now, you know, in the goal scoring race. He's almost on pace here with Leon Draisaitl. And then you got Chris Kreider, who has obviously been, you know, having his best season. It's remarkable what he's been able to do. And also what ties into this, you know, him tying Jaromir Jágr, I do think we need to mention here, Sean, what Jágr did. Jágr, 50 years old, still playing in the Czech Republic, owns Kladno, the team he plays for, moves the game to the O2 Arena so they can sell more tickets and raise money. All the money raised there is going to go to the refugees from Ukraine who have come into the Czech Republic. They raised over $160,000 for those refugees, and $68,000 of that came from the National Hockey League. 68,068, Jágr's number. You see the tie-in, obviously. So the league donated to that. Jágr does an amazing thing for that. And then Ovechkin, you know, continues to do amazing things on the ice.
Yeah, no, the game in the Czech Republic was amazing. All the stuff that they did around it. I don't know if you've seen the videos of the Ukrainian flag in the lower bowl. They had like flashcards. It was like a Steve Mayer special. And then they had all kinds of messages. And they don't do a lot of the same things. Haven't been over to Europe and seen games. They don't, you know, do like the military hero stuff that they do here in North America. But they had a lot of elements of that with refugees and everything else. And it was just a really well done event. And, you know, Jaromir Jágr was passionate about it and made it happen, and good for him. But like you said, I mean, Ovi's back here and he's just putting people in his rearview mirror, and he's only got two to chase now. And as theoretical as this has been all along, it's not theoretical anymore. No. There's only two names left, and at the pace he's going, they're legitimate possibilities.
Well, I mean, health-wise, everything works out. He's going to pass Gordie Howe next season, right? I mean, Gordie Howe's next on the list at 801. We know Gretzky's there at 894. The chase is on. And this is why Alex Ovechkin signed the five-year contract with the Washington Capitals. He signed it, the contract. This guy, he's got his Stanley Cup. He's chasing another one. There's no question about it. The team's playing better. They hit a lull. Brian McClellan, as you mentioned, kind of threw the hand grenade into the room, said, I don't know if I'm gonna do anything to help this team out. And now they've won three games in a row, and they play again tonight, Wednesday night, against the Edmonton Oilers, when Ovechkin can pass Jágr. Gordie Howe's next. Gretzky's there. He signed the five-year deal to average 33 goals per season, and he would pass him. Well, he's given himself a better chance because he's already got 36 this season.
Yeah, he knocks it down a little bit. But let's – two things here. Let's say, first of all, Gordie's – World Hockey Association goals aren't counted here.
No.
So let's just give Mr. Hockey a little pop in what he was able to accomplish. And then the other props that we need to give is to Nicky Backstrom, who set up a ton of Alex Ovechkin's goals, and they played 1,000 games together last night. What a perfect synergy for Alex to be able to get this milestone playing in his 1,000th game with Nick Backstrom, because they've been inseparable and they're kind of on the same wavelength. And when you think of players that have played together in 1,000 games as teammates, you know, maybe the Sedins is the one that jumps out, that's maybe been better than those two, but I can't think of anybody else, because Sid and Gino haven't done it yet. Taze and Kane haven't done it yet. They're both close, but these guys, especially as active players, nobody's even close to them.
You know, no question. But just want to toss this in defense of Alex Ovechkin too. You mentioned Gordie Howe's World Hockey Association records; they don't count. Alex Ovechkin didn't get the 04-05 season. There was a lockout in the 2012-13 season, so there were games missed there. There was a cutoff in the 19-20 season and a shortened 2021 season. So he's probably got close to 200 games that were not afforded to him, which 200 games for Alex Ovechkin's another, what, 60, 70 goals, you know? So, I mean, you think about it that way, too. That also plays a role. But so he's been – obviously, he's scoring now. They're winning now, and he's one away from moving into sole possession of third. But now we've got Austin Matthews. So let's turn our focus to the one guy that he can't catch this season, because he's just going to keep rolling. Austin Matthews, the hat trick the other night against Seattle, 43 goals, on pace for 62 goals this season. Nobody has done it, scored 60 since Steven Stamkos in the 2011-12 season. Matthews, I mean, he is just a machine right now that seems unstoppable when he has the puck. What did Wayne Simmons say? Every time he touches a puck, it seems like it turns to gold. And he just continues to light it up. 84 goals in 106 games since the start of last season, Sean. 84 goals in 106 games.
He's scoring at 0.8% or 0.8. And nobody's done that. In 25 years, nobody's done that. He did 0.79 last year, and so did Ovi in his 07-08 year. Stamkos the year he scored the 62, he was at 0.73. Mm-hmm. So 0.80 is just a ridiculous pace to score goals at. So he's feeling it, and he's been feeling it for 2 years, just in an unbelievable groove right now, and so fun to tune in and watch. Like, even if you're not a Maple Leafs fan or you hate the Maple Leafs, like so many people do for whatever reason, you still can't stop watching.
Yeah. His 84 goals in 106 games since the start of last season is 15 more goals than the next guy, Leon Draisaitl, in 7 fewer games than Draisaitl has played. So that is an incredible number. And look, Sean, you want entertainment, pure entertainment, great hockey entertainment, turn on the Toronto Maple Leafs. You get them Sunday, the Tim Hortons Heritage Classic against the Buffalo Sabres in Hamilton, Ontario at Tim Hortons Field, 4:00 Eastern. You get it on a national stage, and that's where Austin Matthews will be. But that's also where the Toronto Maple Leafs defensive game will be. And as good as Matthews has been, and he has been great, as good as Mitch Marner, as fun as they are to watch, they're allowing 4 goals a game every night almost. Like, honestly, like, you look at it, Sean, they haven't won a playoff round since 2004. They play like this, they're still not going to win a playoff round since 2004. They cannot play like this. We've talked about it a number of times on this podcast. You have beaten the drum on it. Top lines get shut down. Not all the time, you know, but if you shut a top line down in a 7-game series 3 or 4 times, you win that series if they're playing like the Toronto Maple Leafs are defensively right now, if they're getting the goaltending that the Maple Leafs are getting right now. And it's a problem. They've allowed 4 or more goals in 4 straight games and in 8 of their last 10 games. Now, they're 3-4-1 in those 8 games that they've allowed because they can score like crazy, but they're not going to be able to score like crazy. So I don't know what the answer is here for Toronto, because we've touched on it before, and the beat goes on. It's the same story over and over again with the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, go talk to the Edmonton Oilers with the 2 best players in the league and what happens in the playoffs with those guys. So they need something, you know, and Kyle Dubas, in leading up to this game, you know, made his appearance in Hamilton, you know, to beat the drums for the game. And he said, you know, I don't know that I need a goalie. Like, Jack Campbell was an all-star, and this is a recency bias thing. And it's not a recency bias thing. It's they're leaking goals. And I don't know if it's Jack Campbell's fault. I don't know if it's Peter Mrazek's fault. I don't know if it's Jake Muzzin not being in the lineup regularly. I don't know if it's their forwards not coming back as conscientiously as maybe other teams do in their system, but there is a fundamental problem here. And it may be a piece of all four of those that I just mentioned that needs to be addressed. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of whistling past the graveyard happening in Toronto, but I think there needs to be. Like, you can't come out and say, oh, our goaltending's crap. Like, no. You can't do that. So of course he's going to say his goaltending's good, but does it need to be better? Yeah, it needs to be a lot better.
Do they go into the market for a goalie? I mean, what do you think? You know, I mean, the trade deadline's 12 days away from when we're recording this. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury would obviously be an upgrade in a lot of places, but there's now talk that Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't want to get traded from Chicago. I think going to Toronto would be a very intriguing thing to do, obviously. I mean, if you are the goalie that goes there and is able to win a playoff round and maybe you make a run, I mean, they'll put a statue out in front of the building for you, right? Even if you only play for them for, you know, 3 months. But, you know, if it's not him, is it Semyon Varlamov, which is another conversation I'd like to get into a little bit later on in the podcast about the Islanders, but could he be moved? Would he be an upgrade over Jack Campbell? Or do you believe Kyle Dubas when he says, I don't know if I need one. I believe in Jack Campbell.
I somewhat believe him because you look at Jack Campbell's numbers early this year and last year, like we were talking about long-term extensions and how long and how much money, and that conversation's gone out the window. So will they go into the market? They will. Will it be for a goalie? I don't know, but they have to do something because the pressure's on. Like for that whole front office, the pressure's on. You know, that for years they've said, we're getting better, and then they lose in the first round. We're getting better, and they have been getting better, but they still can't figure out that first round. And without doing that again this year, you know that the screws are going to tighten a little bit. Everybody's desperate to get deep in the playoffs after, you know, what's happened financially for the last 2 years. These are the rounds. This is the time when you can make some of your money back. You know, this is the profit generation portion of the season. So if you're a high spending team and you do all those things, like playoff success is paramount. So to not have that again would be detrimental to the well-being of everybody in the front office. So they will go in the market. Do they go and try and get a big defenseman instead? Somebody who can kind of tighten up the front of their net if they believe in Jack Campbell? Or, you know, do they try and make their team a little bit more defensive up front with shoring up their bottom six? I don't know. Like, those are the decisions they have to make. I think it's really hard to introduce a goalie into a team this late in the year. Kevin Woodley is our guy that does Unmasked, has written about it numerous times in his column. Like, different systems, different responsibilities, you know, defensemen either opening up lanes for you to let you see the shots or trying to block everything. Like, teams attack everything differently. And if you're a goalie that's grown up in one system or plays one system or is used to one system, you suddenly go to another one. You know, I always think of Ryan Miller.
Yeah.
Like, that one year he got traded, he was really good. And then he got traded and it just went off the tracks. And part of it was because he was completely unprepared to play the way that he needed to play because it was foreign to what he was used to. And that can be really hard on a goalie who's used to systems and used to communication and knows what every one of his defensemen is going to do. And now he's got all these variables that he has to worry about and he can't just concentrate on his game.
That is a very important aspect, right? Of, you know, the analysis that goes into this is it's not just throwing a guy in front of the net because he stops the puck well. There's a whole systematic play, system play and everything you just brought up that makes that makes the difference in how well he can stop the puck and how often he can do it and how consistent he can play and how confident he can play. So you're right. It's not that easy. I think in the end, Jack Campbell is the guy that they're going to go with and they just have to be better around him because I don't know if Fleury's not there. I don't know if there's an upgrade for them for that, for what they're going to have to give up to get that guy. And I don't know that it's worth it to give up that guy. Kyle Dubas is right. Jack Campbell was having a great year. He was an all-star and he deserved to be there. And now he's hit a slump and the team around him is not helping him out. They have to figure out how to do that. But we talk about the trade deadline a lot and it's now 12 days away. And in order for you to make trades, Sean, like especially at that position, you have to be making a trade that makes your team better. You hear the GM say it all the time. If we can find something that's going to make us better. the goalie market's interesting, but I don't know how many of the guys out there make it, make whoever they go to better.
Well, when's the last time you can remember
a
goalie being dealt to make somebody better? Everybody's desperate for it every year, and we talk about it every year. And the last one that I can remember that had any kind of impact was Rolison, right, in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the last guy when you're like, oh, did he do anything? Oh, yeah, he did some. And there's been other guys that have come up and played like from within the system that got hot late in the year and stuff like that. But a true trade, you know, that's the last one I can think of that had any kind of impact. And, you know, it really is dangerous. And it can be as simple as playing the puck, right? That's what we're talking about. Like mm-hmm. a goalie who plays the puck a lot goes to a team where they don't play the puck a lot. It confuses the whole team, because they're used to their breakouts and they're going back to get the puck. And all of a sudden, here's this guy flipping it around, or they have a goalie that plays the puck all the time. And now you get somebody that you got to chain to the goalpost, like Mike Richter back in his playing days when they never wanted to see him come out of the blue paint. And now your D are going back and they're used to a goalie who's going to play the puck and move it up. Now they got to go back and get it. And they're getting absolutely crushed on the forecheck. And it changes the whole way you put, like, it's that simple. It's a left catch, left, a right catch kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all those things. Like, we think it's easy and it's not. When you're playing at this level, the slightest little change messes up so much.
They're going to be interesting to watch. The Leafs are always interesting to watch. They're so entertaining to watch, but what's going to happen with them is going to be fascinating. But they have an opponent in the outdoor game on Sunday too, the Heritage Classic in Hamilton, Ontario. It's the Buffalo Sabres, and we were able to catch up with their leading scorer, Tage Thompson, who is having a terrific season. By the way, 26 points in his last 27 games. So here's that interview with Sabres forward, Tage Thompson. Tage, thanks so much for hopping on with us. So it's a big one this weekend, one that, you know, everybody looks forward to, the outdoor game. You guys get a chance to play the Toronto Maple Leafs up in Hamilton, Ontario. What are you looking forward to here? What's getting your juices flowing a little bit?
Yeah, I think obviously it's always a nice battle between us and Toronto. Obviously, right over the border there, so it's a good rivalry for us. And I think getting the chance to play an outdoor game just enhances that rivalry even more, you know, throwing it back to the, you know, old school outdoor. So it's going to be fun.
Do you guys walk into that game maybe with a little more confidence from the last time you played Toronto and the way you were able to compete with them?
Yeah, I think we've been playing some good hockey as of late. Obviously, the results aren't really where we want them, obviously, but I think we're starting to string along some, you know, full 60-minute games here. And, you know, I think the way we played last time against them, obviously they're a great team and they got a lot of skill, but we know we can play with them. I think that last game gives us a lot of confidence heading in.
You know, if we stick with, you know, with this game, the outdoor game, and play in Toronto, it also, it puts you guys in a national showcase game too. And I wonder, you know, for your team where it is right now, what's the impact of that, getting a national showcase game? You know, it's not, the season isn't going exactly the way you guys want, obviously, but there's things that are going well. And is it meaningful to you to be able to put that in the national spotlight?
Yeah, I think it's huge. Obviously, I think the exposure for us and our team is going to be great. Obviously, you know, we're a young group right now. We're going through some learning curves and some growing pains. I think that's, you know, it's only going to make us better just learning to work through this adversity. Obviously, the season's not going the way we want it, but, you know, I think that was kind of one of the messages we had going into the season, knowing that we were going to face some challenges and how do we respond to those challenges. And I think there's no better way to, you know, show the adversity and the character of our group on national television than a game like that. So it'll be a good opportunity for us.
And it'll be a good showcase for you. You've kind of flown under the radar a little bit and having a career year. You've done a lot of good things this year, lead the team in scoring. For you, when you look at your season, what's kind of explained that leap?
I think, honestly, the biggest thing is just opportunity. I think, you know, I've got a coach right now who believes in me. He's given me a lot of opportunity and put a lot of trust and faith in me. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. I think, you know, just getting continuous opportunity and knowing that, you know, all right, if I make a mistake here, I'm going back out and I can fix it. I get an opportunity to learn from it and move forward instead of getting shut down. And, you know, then you're thinking about it. Maybe in the past, you know, past few seasons, you make a mistake, you're thinking about it a little too long. And Donnie's just given me an opportunity to just go out and play, just play my game and, you know, learn and grow. And I think he's given that to a lot of guys on the team. And I think you see that with a lot of guys, not just myself. We're learning, we're growing. And I think that's a big thing for us. It's going to make us better in the future. And, you know, hopefully eventually a team that's going to be competing for Stanley Cups year after year.
You know, the line you've been playing with a lot lately too is really, it's not just you, it's Alex Tuch, it's Jeff Skinner. So what is that? Why is that line meshed? What's worked for you three?
I think just the combo of speed and size. I know obviously Skinny's not the biggest guy, but he's extremely strong on his stick and he wins all his 50-50 battles. And, you know, Tucky's obviously a monster and he can fly. And I think we're getting most of our offense when we're in on forechecks and we're causing turnovers and just playing direct hockey right to the net. And I think from there, stuff opens up for us and then we can use our skill and our creativity once we're in the offensive zone. But, you know, I think our success comes just off of our speed and, you know, disrupting pucks up the ice.
You talked a little bit about what Alex brings to your line, but what has he brought to the Sabres since he's come from the Vegas Golden Knights? Like maybe even not on ice.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy. Honestly, he's one of the nicest guys I met. Just genuine, loves the Sabres, loves New York. Like obviously he grew up in Syracuse, so he's a hometown kid. So he's got a lot of pride when he throws on the sweater and you can feel it even practice. And when he comes to the rink, he's always excited and, you know, he's just a fun guy to be around. I think he brings that positive energy even on days, you know, we have games where we didn't play our best and you come to the rink next day and maybe it's a little dull in the locker room. And he brightens it up right away.
He came there and he wanted to be in Buffalo too, right? I mean, he wanted to be a Saber. Was that an impact as well?
Absolutely. You can sense it. I mean, like I said, just the way he carries himself, he's always having fun. You know, it's not all talk. The way he carries himself, the way he practices, prepares for games and things like that. And, you know, you can tell he's just excited to be here and excited to help turn this thing around.
Tej, I was looking at your bio before we started the talk and, you know, you look at all the stops in your career. Is this literally in Buffalo the longest you've been in one place in your life since you were like 14 years old?
Yeah. This is the longest I've been. Before this, I think the longest place I've been was Illinois when my dad was coaching in Peoria. I think we're there for 4 years. So that's previously the longest I've been somewhere. So yeah, this is kind of my home base now. So it's been nice to be kind of settled into one place for more than 2 years.
How do you get used to that? Like all of that upheaval as a grown man, like your dad, I know your dad went through it and a lot of players go through it, but as a kid, like I think you went to what, a double digit high schools or double digit schools before you graduated. Yep. Like, is there a way as a kid to kind of process that?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of all I knew. So it's like, it just comes natural, I guess. I mean, it's been me and my brother been doing that since we're, you know, toddlers. So it's, we don't know anything any different, you know? So it's, I don't want to say it's been difficult for us because it hasn't. I think a big piece of that is just because of hockey itself, the game. You know, every time we've picked up and move, I've got my brother with me. And then obviously I've got 23 best friends. I go to whatever city, you know, I'm joining a hockey team. So there's your best friends immediately when you move. So it makes the moving pretty easy. You know, you're not struggling to find new friends. You got your guys when you relocate to a new team. So I think that just prepares you for, you know, the hockey lifestyle. You're always picking up and moving. So I think it's been beneficial for us.
You just mentioned something that clicked with me a little bit. You and your brother kind of going through this together a little bit. I mean, not always together, but always somebody to talk to about some experiences. I just talked with the Stahl brothers, all three of them. Mark's going to play in his 1,000th game on Saturday, and all three are going to have 1,000 games played. And all of them mentioned how going through this with a brother, and they get two of them, you know, each of them have two of them, has made a world of difference for them. What has it meant to you to be able to kind of, you know, carry through, you know, junior hockey, college, professional hockey with your brother there? And you have your dad too, because he did it and he's still in it.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. Honestly, it's a dream come true. Obviously, me and him grew up going to my dad's games, you know, skipping school, going to the rink after morning skate and jumping on the ice. And it's just, that's what we wanted to do from a very young age. And we both knew that. And I think when you have, you know, your brother with you growing up, and we're pretty close in age, we're like 2 years apart. So very competitive. And I think it helped us, you know, we push each other and challenge each other. I think it only makes us better. And, you know, going back to the moving situation, when you move, it's, it probably would be tough if I was alone, but, you know, I have my brother there and it just makes it easier. You got someone to bond with and we both love the same stuff, you know, hockey, golf, outdoor stuff. So, no, it's been awesome to share this experience. And then obviously he played in his first game and And we got to play against him for his first NHL game. So that was a really cool experience.
More importantly, who's the best golfer in the family?
Honestly, it's probably my dad right now. He's been out in Arizona in the summer, so he's getting in his fair share of golf right now. So he's a little bit of a sandbagger too. So
so it's a big night in Buffalo tomorrow night, Thursday night. You're playing in your 200th NHL game, number one. So congratulations. That's a little bit of a milestone. But Jack Eichel's coming back too. What's your expectation? What do you think it's going to be like in the building?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone knows the type of player he is. And I think it's going to be crazy energy. I know, obviously, he's been here for a long time and he's done so much for the Sabres and in this organization. And, you know, I know we're excited to play against him. You know, we want the opportunity to try to shut him down. And it's going to be a good challenge. You know, they're a good team. They're playing well. And I'm excited for it.
I mean, I would assume it also brings back a lot of memories for you in the time you spent with Jack before he was hurt and kind of, you know, what he was able to accomplish there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, he's done so much for the Sabres and for the organization. And, you know, he's a tremendous player and he was just practicing with them, playing in games with them. You learn so much, not only, I mean, just by watching him, you're just on the ice, watching him in practice and in games and you see the way he plays. He's so explosive, so dynamic with the puck. And, you know, I try to imitate him a little bit in the way I play and in certain assets of my game. And I think my game's grown because of that.
If I could, I wanted to go back to the outdoor game. You know, with the game on Sunday against Toronto, what's your outdoor hockey experience like? What's your, you know, your resume on an outdoor rink like?
Yeah. I played in an outdoor game and when I was at UConn, I can't remember if it was my freshman or my sophomore year, but we played the frozen Fenway against Maine. We played at Fenway Park. That was pretty sick. It was a really cool experience playing out in Fenway. It was my first real outdoor game, like competition. Other than that, just when we lived in Alaska, just twirling around on the outdoor rinks. I mean, it seemed like everybody had one in their backyard up there. So other than that, that's about it. So that's kind of where my resume ends, but I'm excited for it. I think, you know, everyone dreams of playing in the outdoor games and then get to play it on the, you know, the biggest stage in the world. It's going to be a really cool atmosphere, cool experience, and obviously against a great team and a good rival.
Related to that, and I know you're a little bit loath to give any kind of compliments to anybody you're playing, but we were speaking a little bit earlier in the podcast about Austin Matthews and what he's been accomplishing as an opponent and as a hockey player. You know, you're a fan, you watch the game. The way he's playing right now, what makes him so difficult to handle, to try and contain?
He's unbelievable. I mean, I had the opportunity to play with him on his team, U18 Worlds, for 1 year, and just watching him, I don't think I've played against someone who's just more determined or more hungry, just in all assets of the game. I mean, he's one of the best competitors all around I've ever seen. He's so hungry to score. He wants to be the guy that the team leans on. And, you know, he's fun to watch. He's so strong on pucks. The way he goes to the net, just the way he does everything. I mean, plays the game the right way. And, he gets rewarded for it.
Is he a model for you even to look at and say,
oh, I can absolutely play that game? I love watching him. I think, obviously, you know, he's one of the best players in the league, but even when I was playing on his team, just watching him in practice, his habits and, you know, the way he prepares and stuff like that is obviously someone I look up to and, you know, want to learn from and continue to watch and grow. And, I think he's the best player to watch if you want to, you know, complete your game and round it out to be a full 200-foot player.
Just not on Sunday. You're not going to be watching.
No, I think it's good though. You know, like, at the same time, you know, he makes people around him better, even his competition. Cause you know, like we get the opportunity every time I play him, I want to shut him down. I want to be better than him, you know? So he brings out the best in everybody. And, you know, I take a lot of pride in that when we line up against him, you know, I want to be better than him. And, it's something to strive for. So it's a good challenge.
Last one from me. You know, so the playoffs seem like a real reach for you guys right now, but through the last quarter of the season, last whatever you have, 25, 26, 27 games left, 24, I think it is. What would make this a successful finish for the Buffalo Sabres?
I think just learning how to be consistent. I think obviously we're a young team. We're going through some things. We're learning. But I think we show flashes where we can be a dominant team in this league. And then we show games where we're sleeping. And I think it's just finding that consistency where we can do it shift after shift, game after game. And I think, you know, that comes with experience and it comes with maturity. And those are things we're going to learn and we're going to fix. And as we get older and continue to learn, it's going to be better. But if we can learn how to be consistent night in, night out, you know, we're going to be, a team that's tough to handle in this league. I think the biggest thing is we got a lot of guys that believe it and that are dedicated and trying to, you know, turn it around and willing to put in the work. So I like where the season's headed or where our team's headed. And I think for us, these last few games or however many we have, just finding a way to be consistent.
Awesome, Tage. Thank you so much. I wish you the best of weather on Sunday for everybody, just to make it a great stage for you guys and an awesome game. And as good as the last one you played against Toronto, it'll make everything interesting. So thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Really good stuff there from Tage Thompson. I love his perspective on the Sabres and where they're at right now and what these last 24 games could mean to them. But the first game that they're going to play of the 24 that they have left is going to be very, very interesting. Thursday night, it's Jack Eichel back in the building, right? I was at the game when John Tavares went back with the Maple Leafs to play against the Islanders at Nassau Coliseum. I don't think it's going to be like that. There was vitriol from Islander fans towards John Tavares. It was ugly, right? I don't know that the same, you know, the venom is going to be spewed at Jack Eichel. I'm sure there will be some, but it was different circumstances, number one. And Jack Eichel, for a while there, he was the star of the future. And, you know, they sold a lot of jerseys. I guess you could say the same about Tavares, but it just seems like they didn't leave on the same terms. You know, Tavares signs with the Maple Leafs, puts the picture out about, you know, sleeping in the Maple Leafs sheets or pajamas or whatever it is, you know, and Islander fans just thought he was going to be back. They thought for sure he was going to be back. And I think Sabres fans just knew Eichel was gone.
Yeah, no, they did. I think the thing was that Islander fans felt like they were led along by John Tavares at the trade deadline that, you know, hey, I might come back. Don't trade me. Like, let's make a run here and I might sign. And then he signed with Toronto. And that's where all of that came from. Jack Eichel never did that. Jack Eichel was like, I'm here and then I'm hurt and then you won't do what I want. And now I want to go. Like, he was up front the whole time about what he wanted. He either wanted that surgery or he wanted to go someplace where he could have it. And I don't think there was anything nefarious about it. And there was a difference of opinion. The ownership and the player had a difference of opinion, and it was settled in the only way it could be settled, which was a change of scenery. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be some disappointment and there'll be some sadness and there may be a little bit of anger, because that's all part of the grieving process, right? You've lost your captain, you've lost your best player. It's not the first time it's happened. I think as a Buffalo fan, you have to be a little bit excited. I know it's a small sample size, but with the way they're playing and some of the young pieces they have. But the thing I'll tell you the most that I'm looking forward to is to see what Jack Eichel does in Buffalo, because he's been phenomenal. My God, since he's come back, it's like he hasn't missed a day. He's the best player on that Vegas team right now with the injuries they have and what they're dealing with. And they're not playing well and they need this game. Like, you can't go into games against Buffalo and Montreal. They're playing pretty good spoilers right now. Both Buffalo and Montreal have spoiled some suspected 2 points that didn't come to pass. So I'm really interested. It'll be an emotional night for Jack Eichel. I'm sure he has a lot of memories. I'm sure he'll go to the wrong room. He'll make that turn the wrong way and all those things will happen, and he'll get the video tribute and everything else. And it'll be emotional, but he, like I said, he is just playing lights out.
He's playing really well. And I think it was something you just said caught my attention, is that he's their best player right now. That's a problem. To me, that's a problem. Like, you know, he's played 10 games and he's coming off major surgery and he's been good. He's got 7 points in those 10 games, but they're not winning. They just lost 2-1 in Philadelphia. You can't go into Philadelphia and lose if you're the Vegas Golden Knights. That you just can't, it just can't happen. And they're not scoring, Sean. Their last 11 games, 4-6-1, 2.09 goals per game, 10.7% on the power play in their last 11 games. Like, that's a pretty good sample size right now. And, you know, who would have thought take a look at the standings, right? Let's take a look at where the standings are right now. You think, well, beginning of the season, we were saying, right, Vegas, the runaway, and then everybody else in the Pacific Division. Well, Vegas right now has a 4-point cushion for a playoff spot. 4 points. That's it, right? And Edmonton has got 64 points in 57 games. Vegas has 68 games in 58 games. So 68 points in 58 games. So they are teetering right now. They need this game. They need Jack Eichel to be really good. Yes, injuries have played a role. I get it. Every team deals with injuries, man. You know, and they're not scoring. Their power play has not been very good. But Jack Eichel has been. And I'm curious to see how he plays, the reaction, like you said, the reaction he has. And I'm very curious, the reaction he will get, especially when they give that video tribute. And you know what? I don't have a problem with the video tribute. Heck, the Islanders just gave a video tribute to Devon Taves, you know, when he played there the other night, you know, with the Avalanche, and he didn't have near the impact for the Islanders as Jack Eichel had for the Buffalo Sabres, especially with the amount of jerseys that Jack Eichel sold, those Eichel jerseys that the Sabres sold in his time with Buffalo. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can walk away from that history. You know, and when it comes to the Vegas Golden Knights, like, everybody has injuries. I would argue that the Golden Knights have had their core players just decimated throughout this year. They've lost almost every core player on their team at some point. And Mark Stone, to take that out of a lineup is to take a Patrice Bergeron out of your lineup, Chris Kreider, whoever you want to put up there and say, you know, this is the guy that I'm going to take away. How good are you going to be? Like, he's in that caliber of players. So, and look, they have to worry. Like, there's teams coming behind them. Like, the LA Kings are playing fantastic hockey right now. The win they had in Boston the 2 nights ago, where they're down 2-1 late in the game, they score with 5 seconds left or whatever it was, and then win in overtime. That's a huge game. The Bruins were playing great. They had them down. They had them down for the count. They were probably on 9 on a 10 count. And somehow the Kings picked themselves up off the mat, score a goal, you know, dirty goal in front of the net, and then get the game winner. Like, they're playing some confident hockey right now, and they have a lot of good players on that team.
Yeah, look, that Pacific Division is very interesting to watch, and the Kings have made it that way, and so have the Vegas Golden Knights because of how they've played. And obviously the Calgary Flames have been terrific too. But we do know the trade deadline, Sean, is coming around 12 days, as I've mentioned several times already on this podcast. And I got a question in the mailbag. Well, a lot of the questions in the mailbag are about trade deadline related topics, but one of them, the Islanders. And the question was, are they sellers? And look, they're 21-24-8. They're not making the playoffs. They have to be in that. Lou Lamoriello has to be in a selling mode. There's no question about it. You know, Cal Clutterbuck is a guy I think that could help a contending team in a bottom six role. You know, he's a pending unrestricted free agent. They'll move him. That makes sense. The Islanders have to have a little bit of a reboot through their forward depth. They need another frontline scorer. They're not going to get that right now, but, you know, they need a little bit of a reboot. That identity line for them of Clutterbuck, Cizikas, and Martin has not been there for them this year. That needs to change. Clutterbuck, I would imagine, will get traded and will be going to a team that he can help any team, I think. I think there's a lot. Any team that's a contending team would want a guy like Cal Clutterbuck to play in a third or in a fourth line role. But the one I mentioned earlier was Semyon Varlamov, Sean. 1 year left on his deal. It's a goalie. You know, we talked about all the challenges that a goalie can have when he goes to a new team, right at the trade deadline, and the difficulties for that goaltender and the difficulties for that team. But do you see the Islanders trading Varlamov now, trading him in the offseason, or keeping him to continue with Sorokin for next season, even though Varlamov will have, you know, be that pending UFA, and Sorokin has earned, I think, the number one job?
No, I think if they can move him, they're going to move him. Like, why wouldn't you? If you can get that money out of your system, you know, if he's not going to be the number one going forward, do you want to carry a guy that's making $5 million as your backup in kind of a flat cap world? I don't think so, but who are you going to find to take him, right? Like, you think about all the teams that might be looking for a goalie. How many of them would find Varlamov to be a significant improvement on what they have, significant enough to give up a bounty of assets to Washington. Do it, because that's what it's going to take. Is he that much better? I don't know.
Washington. There's a history there, right? He knows, he obviously has a relationship with Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Orlov, some of these guys. He's played there before, so it wouldn't be new to him. He hasn't played there in a while, but it wouldn't be new to him. System's obviously different with Laviolette versus when he was there with Bruce Boudreau. I understand that. But Washington, yeah, they're the team. And the reason I say that is we talked all about Ovechkin before, and we talked all of, you know, you mentioned Backstrom and the 1,000 games played together. It's an aging veteran core that is trying to make one more run at it. And we, you know, when the Flurry, you know, when all the Flurry talk was hot, it was all about Washington. And if he's not going to get moved, and Varlamov is, he's the next best option, and you get him for two playoff runs, not just one. And I think that's significant. And that is the window maybe a little bit open longer than that for Washington with this core, probably is, but you know, this year, next year, and then maybe 1 year after that, you know, we'll see. And Varlamov is a guy that has a lot of experience. He's played a lot of playoff hockey of late. That's the team to me that if you're going to look, that's the one. But there's also another one. We talked to Billy Guerin last week, right? The podcast last week we did. And I'd encourage you to go back and listen to it because the Wild GM was dealing with it then. He's still dealing with it now, even though they got a win. What about their goaltending? So that's another one to look at. But I think Washington is the team.
Yeah, maybe. You make sense in talking of it that way. But I also think you have to do some risk analysis, right? Like, does McClellan believe that his team can win, that they can get out of the East, that they can get past all the teams that they're going to have to get past? I don't know if they're that good, right? They've been middling for a long time now this season. There's other issues that they have to address. I don't think they're deep defensively. You know, forward-wise, they could use a piece or two. So I don't even know if goaltending – I mean, goaltending probably is their biggest problem, but it's the hardest fix. You can fix other things, and you can tighten up and try and protect your goalie a little bit more in a playoff-type atmosphere. So maybe, but I think it's going to be really hard to move a goalie just because of the market and what the assets are going to be and what you're going to get back in return.
Yeah, and the Rylanders are going to be asking for a little bit more because he's going to a division rival that is, and he's signed for one more year. So he's their goalie next year too. But the Islanders could also get back maybe one of their other, maybe like a Vanacek could go the other way. Remember, you know, they already were willing to part with him once when Seattle picked him and then they got him back. But I think it was last week when we talked about this, is, you know, you're Brian McClellan, you can't go around and say, I don't think we're good enough. You got to go in, you know, with the group you have right now. You can't go to Ted Leonsis, your owner, and say, I'm not sure I'm going to do anything here because we're not good enough. No. Make them better. Let's go. Time's to win right now. We got to try to win another cup with Ovechkin.
It depends on the prices. I think at some point you have to walk that line and you have to say, look, I know it's disappointing that we're not good enough, but we're not going to be good enough for the next 10 years if I make this deal. Like, this is crazy talk. And I know you want a goalie, and Lou Lamoriello has me in a corner. And if I do this, I'm going to ruin the franchise for the next 5 years. And look, GMs will do that because they're trying to save their job, and who blames them, right? Oh yeah, we'll make that deal. That'll be great because it's either going to work out or I'm not going to be working here very much longer. But at some point, like I said, with no goalies on the market, like, the price is going to be astronomical. And how long are you willing to pay that price?
Yeah, true. I think they have to go out and, I mean, honestly, I think they have to go out and do something. And the goaltending is where the need is the most. And it's the one team where everything we talked about with goaltending before, since Varlamov does at least have a history with some of these guys, I think it's a little bit, you know, all of what we were mentioning before, which makes a lot of sense, is just a little bit loosened up because of the history there. Let's stick in New York before we end here and go to another debate that's starting to, you know, get a lot of fire here. And I fueled it a little bit too in my mailbag this week, the Igor Shesterkin in the Hart Trophy conversation. Now I'm going to be upfront here, Sean. We are doing our trophy tracker voting right now for, as we approach the quarter pole of the season or the three quarter mark, whatever it is. And it's our job as writers to send to you who we think are top five in some of the major awards that we do. So when I sent it to you yesterday, I sent it to you with Igor Shesterkin as number one in my heart vote and Austin Matthews number two. Slept on it. And then this morning I wrote you back and I said, flip them. And it wasn't that I was swayed by the hat trick, I think, by Matthews. It was more along the lines of, I see everything that Toronto Maple Leafs have to deal with. And this guy could score 60 goals. He's the biggest factor for them. And so is Igor Shesterkin is without question the biggest factor for the New York Rangers. But 60 goals happens so rare. And I think if he gets it, he should be the guy. And he's on pace for it now. So I switched it. But I am all in on the Igor Shesterkin in the Hart Trophy conversation, Sean. Not as the winner right now, but in the conversation. And the bar for me is through the course of the season, you play in at least 50 games. At least, you know, if you play in at least 50 to 55 games as a starting goaltender, you're under two as a goals against average, and you're above 940 as a save percentage, and you're winning, you know, all of your game, almost all of your games. And Igor Shesterkin right now is 28-6-3 with a 193 goals against, a 942 save percentage in 37 games, and he's been 900 or better in 83.3% of his games. And the Rangers are not a good 5-on-5 team. He makes them that much better. When Carey Price was in 2014-15, what did he do? What was his impact on the Canadiens versus the team that the Canadiens were of skaters, the team that they put out there? And Carey Price's impact on the Montreal Canadiens that year was so far and away worth the MVP, because without him, they're not close. And I think the same thing is going on here with Igor Shesterkin and the New York Rangers, who are bottom third of the league in 5-on-5 scoring. They're bottom third in the league in shot attempts percentage. They're bottom third in the league in faceoff percentage. They're middle of the pack in high danger scoring chances against. And oh, by the way, Shesterkin's the best in the league against high danger scoring chances. And then you look at the bar. Carey Price didn't even have a 940 that year, but he had 44 wins and a 196 goals against. And now I'm even saying Shesterkin's got to be better than that to get the Hart Trophy. And I think he will be. And that's why he belongs in the conversation.
Carey Price was, he had lapped the field as far as goalies went. Like, there wasn't another goalie you could put in the conversation for MVP. I believe there are this time. Like, Freddie Anderson has almost the same numbers. He's at 928 with a 208. After 50 games, what's the big difference there, right? He's only lost 8 times this year. Why isn't he in the conversation?
He's allowed more goals against fewer shots.
Jacob Markstrom has 8 shutouts. The Calgary Flames would be nowhere without him. I bet you can't even name Calgary's backup goalie.
Dan Vladar. Come on.
Okay, Dan Vladar. How many games has he played?
I don't know how many games he played. I know he played the other night and lost.
But how many games has he played? How many games has he played in his career? He's played less than Gorgiev.
Yeah, more than likely, yes.
Oh, he was a minor league goaltender until last year. So why isn't he in the conversation? Like, what makes...
Because you pointed it out yourself. Freddie Anderson is having a terrific year. No doubt about it. Carolina's a better team than the Rangers. They're better 5-on-5. They're better defensively. They're better all around. Calgary, Markstrom's having a terrific season. Calgary's a better team than the Rangers. They play a harder game. They're better on the forecheck. They don't give up near as much as the Rangers give up a lot. Like, Shesterkin faces more than 33 shots per 60 minutes. He faces a lot of high danger scoring chances. The Calgary Flames don't give up high danger scoring chances. I was on the bench with Freddie Anderson during the skills competition while the hardest shot competition was going on. And I actually asked him and Jack Campbell, what are you thinking when you see these guys shooting the puck like this? And Freddie Anderson said to me, and I quote you, I'm just glad we don't give up one-timers. Okay? They don't. I don't know the stat on that, but they don't give up near as much as the Rangers. The Rangers are a good team. Okay, the Rangers are, without Shesterkin, they're a borderline playoff team. With him, they could finish second in that division.
Okay, I still don't believe he's in the MVP conversation. All right. Well, let me change that. He's in the MVP conversation. He's not top three. He's not.
Well, who's top three? I mean, I have Matthews as number one. By the way, you mentioned Markstrom. I got Johnny Gaudreau there in my top three.
Huberto.
All right. I'll give you Huberto. I like Huberto. Terrific playmaker, having a great season. They're having a great season. Yeah, I mean, I would throw him in. I don't think he's top three, but I would throw him into. He's in the conversation.
Okay. So, like I said, look, I'm not taking away from Igor Shesterkin. I know that I've been branded as a Ranger hater throughout the narrative that we've developed this year here and in the Super 16, and that's not the case at all. I just think, you know, that there's a realism that goes in, and I think that Igor Shesterkin has been the best goalie. He would be my Vezina winner, but I don't believe that he's lapped the goalie field to the point that you can say he's a clear MVP over A, B, and C, where I think you can say that for some of the skaters that are going to be on that list.
I'm not so sure. That's why I have him at number two right now, but we'll see. I mean, there's a whole quarter of the season left to go, a little bit more than that. So there's a lot of hockey left to play, and he's going to play a lot, and he's continuous to play well. I'm waiting for the guy to score a goal, by the way, because he is a terrific puck handler. And it's not a knock on the Rangers. It's just that the goalie is the biggest part of that team. And I don't think you'll hear a Ranger fan debate that, Sean. I really don't think you will.
We beg to differ. It's not the first time on this podcast. It won't be the last. We'll do it again when we convene next week, when the trade deadline will almost be here. And as quiet as it's been, I have to assume by next week we'll have something to talk about concrete that has to do with trades and how teams are going to look going forward.
And even if we don't, we'll speculate. So how about that? We'll speculate. We'll be that much closer. But definitely, this was a lot of fun. Enjoy the hockey. Enjoy the outdoor game. Sunday, the Heritage Classic. Toronto, Buffalo, Tage Thompson. We thank him for coming on. Go wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening to this, rate and review us. And go back and listen to the last week's podcast as well with Wild GM Bill Guerin, because it's still very relevant today. Enjoy the hockey.